Today's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by Mubi, the online streaming cinema for your free 30-day trial of Mubi. Go to mubi.com/filmstage.
Hey, little Cobra, don't you know you're gonna shut them down? I took my Cobra down to the track, hitched to the back of my Cadillac. Everyone was there just a waiting for me. There were plenty of stingrays and XKs. Spring, little Cobra, getting ready to strike.
Back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Film Stage Show, the movie review podcast for thefilmstage.com. I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan, and with me today, I have my family. That is Michael Snydell.
Hello, happy to be here.
And Bill Graham.
Woo!
A proper amount of enthusiasm for a movie as incredible, as audacious as the one we are talking about today, and that, of course, is The Fate of the Furious, the eighth film in the venerable and strangely titled Fast and Furious film franchise. We will be devoting the entire episode to that, so I hope you all are prepared. You've got your NOS, you've got your Coronas, and you are ready to...
And only eight movies to watch.
Put the pedal to the metal. Before we get into that, let me remind everyone at home that we can be found on Twitter at Film Stage Show. On Facebook, search for The Film Stage Show. You can email us, podcast@filmstage.com. And of course, we always value your comments and ratings on iTunes. We are also brought to you by Mubi. Mubi is the streaming online cinema that offers you a plethora of ways to watch some of the best films available to stream. A plethora?
A plethora of piñatas?
No, a plethora of independent, international, and all-around wonderful films. Bill, have you never heard the word plethora before?
Would you call it a cavalcade?
No, I would stick with plethora, or perhaps a cornucopia.
He still has not seen this.
All right. Anyway, so there's a lot of ways to watch stuff. You could do it on your phone or your tablet, your smart TV, your Roku, and of course on your computer. The best thing about Mubi is that in addition to streaming, you also have the option to download these films directly to your mobile device, so that you can watch them on the go. I have a vacation I'm going to in a little under 2 months, and you can bet that I will be downloading some Mubi movies to watch so that I can avoid, tactfully, my family and the sun, because my pale Irish skin does not allow me to spend much time on an actual beach. Merely looking at the ocean is sometimes enough to sunburn me, but thanks to Mubi, I don't have to worry about that. I will be free of skin cancer and thoroughly entertained. So for your free 30-day trial of Mubi, go to mubi.com/filmstage. And that's about all we had to go through, really. So guys, are you ready? Are you prepared? Have you watched all eight films in the Fast and Furious franchise?
I have.
Right. Yes.
Well, that means the time... Poor Bill. The time is now... Let us begin our discussion of The Fate of the Furious.
All right, team, listen up. This crew is about family, but the game has changed now. Dominic Toretto just went rogue.
You gonna turn your back on family?
Man, all right, we've been waiting nearly, I think, 2 years for this. It is time to talk about The Fate of the Furious. This is the newest film in the Fast and Furious franchise, and this one is directed by F. Gary Gray, which is going to be a name that I'm sure I'll struggle with. And it stars Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Vin Diesel, Tyrese Gibson, Chris Ludacris Bridges, and it also has Charlize Theron, Kurt Russell, Jason Statham. So... Oh, and Michelle Rodriguez. How could I forget? And a bunch of other people that you will know from film and TV screen. So, first I wanted to bring up an elephant in the room. Michael, have you seen every film in the Fast and Furious franchise?
Yes.
Okay. Bill Graham, you just, this past weekend, caught up because you had not seen past three, correct?
Correct.
So you watched 4, 5, 6, and 7.
Yes. In a week span, it was very car centric. Yeah, and eight.
Yeah. That's true.
Hopefully.
I gotta cop to something. I have not seen the first 4 of these films.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
I caught
5 when it premiered on HBO, and I was like, oh shit, this is amazing. And a friend of mine said, yeah, but like the rest of the series isn't like that one. But it's been like that one since then, but I've never gone back.
In hazing Bill.
Oh, yeah. Well,
and we should have been hazing you.
Yeah, you should have been, but I was smart and kept my mouth shut.
The family.
I'm like Dwayne The Rock Johnson in terms of being part of the family. I wasn't there at the beginning, but I've come in and I'm now firmly entrenched.
Huh. How did you skip the first one?
Because I had taste in high school. Like, I don't know.
Oh, fuck off. The first one's great.
The first one, I saw it and I was like, well, that's a Point Break ripoff with 2 actors that I have no interest in seeing. And I just won't watch it. And then they just seemed like they were getting worse. And then, like I said, a friend of mine was like, you gotta watch 5. And I was like hungover as hell. And it was on HBO. And I the funny thing is, I only saw like the last half of it. And then I was like, oh my God, that was incredible. I have to watch that entire thing now. And then I have been there pretty much opening weekend for every film since then. In fact,
that is so silly. That is so silly because
yeah, what?
it is number 5. Introduces a character that hasn't been in the series since number 1, and like they play it up and there's a big history and I imagine you were like, I have no idea who this goofball is, but he's got a nasty scar on his arm.
I turned to my friend and I was like, who is that? actually, no, I didn't whisper because I was in my house. I was like, oh my God, who is that? Like, what am I supposed to know? And so I've gotten filled in on enough of the backstory to get it. But I'm obviously missing some things. There's some stuff.
I think there is something to be said for, and I guess Bill is the only one who can agree or disagree with me here, but I think there's something to be said about even when this series, you know, is less good than other times, I think there's something to be said for spending as much time as you do with these characters. Like, there's a reason why I kind of care about these people as they do, even as they do things that are more and more untethered from anything you can do on planet Earth.
And that's the thing. I think it would have been interesting for me to begin on the ground floor when it was just a Point Break ripoff about people stealing like DVD VHS players and to come into like this, which is one of the things that was great. If you all listening at home, go back and listen to our Fast 7 or Furious 7, because it was Fast 5.
I think it was Furious 7.
Fast 6. The Furious,
Fast and Furious 7. 6.
I remember having a thing where
Furious
I said...
Furious 7, it is.
Because, like, it first came and it was, like, Fast and Furious 7. Then it said Furious 7 with it all written out. And then I think in the movie itself, it just said Furious number 7. And so I was like, you guys got to get your shit together. This one is the Fate of the Furious, the F8 of the Furious. So... look, I don't know. God only knows what the 9th one will be called. But yeah, here we are. And Danny King, when we recorded number 7, hadn't seen any of them. And he was...
that was certainly an episode.
He was thoroughly entertained, though. He seemed to like it. So let's talk about what we thought of the Fate of the Furious. Bill, as thanks, I guess, as a reward for doing what you did... you get to go first. So, spoiler-free thoughts. What did you think of the Fate of the Furious?
Can we hear brief thoughts if you have anything you want to say about the 4 through 8 as well, Bill?
Yeah, I want to mention kind of the series, some of the highlights, some of the staples of the Fast series so far that I think. There's definitely an interplay between like American Muscle and imports that's like constantly on the forefront. Dodge apparently has become a big sponsor because holy shit, there's a lot of Dodge vehicles, especially in this one. there's literally Dodges flying out of windows and stuff like that.
Like it's, from a dealership, kind of, and as they turn on, it like shows what their model name is.
Yeah. There's always some kind of use of NOS, which is usually very just ridiculous. And I love that. I guess NOS is also a sponsor because they literally have a blue bottle with the NOS logo on it. Like nobody else makes nitric oxide. It's like no. It's only NOS. It's only that's become like a corporate name.
They have like a primordial version of that in the new one too. In that first scene.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my god. I'm just confused because like there's nitrous oxide and then there's the energy drink and I'm just like wondering what the cross is like.
Oh, it's the same thing. It's just in that.
It's labeling. They just really want you to drink. Like act like it's NOS, man.
Right, but like, is the company that makes nitrous oxide for street racing also making the energy drink?
I think so.
I think it's licensing, but either way, it's direct licensed. Okay. So yeah,
right. That's like if Dow Chemical made something like an energy like one of those goo pouches and just called it napalm.
The racing rarely feels or looks real at all. I love how often they shift into corners, and apparently they have a lot of I'm not sure what they even call it. It's because most manual gearboxes, if you've ever driven a manual car, you have to shift down, you have to shift over, you have to shift down, you have to shift over. And all of these cars, especially Dom's cars, he literally shifts down the entire time. And I think that's more of like a street racing thing. But I find it hilarious that he's not only found like 20 different styles of Dodge Challengers to ride in. But he's also all of them have like, I guess what they're called is, I almost want to say it's like a sequential gearbox, but where you basically just shift and you just knock it down if you want to go to a higher gear.
Yeah,
and it's really annoying to watch them drive because it doesn't look realistic at all.
Because
it
looks. Well, just to clarify what you're saying for anyone at home who might be curious, when you drive a standard, as I do, the stick shift. Like, first gear is top left, and then second gear is bottom left, and then third gear is middle top, and then fourth gear is middle bottom, and on and on. But these cars all just have a stick that you progressively pull back as though you were just working your way towards the back seat. And sure, there's, like, little, like, steps that it goes down, but in no way does it approximate what is known to be a standard transmission.
Yeah, it looks goofy as hell.
Yeah.
Let's see what else we got. We got a family is always a big thing. I guess
turn your back on family.
Everywhere they go, they gotta have like a barbecue at some point.
And Corona.
Dom is always wearing tanks or V-necks. Hobbs always in his Under Armour.
Yep.
Car chases. I noticed this kind of trend. Often the cars are all in black. So starting with the first film, where it's all the Honda Civics that they're using to hijack the trucks, those are all in black. The Chargers in number 5 that they use to escape from the police station, those are all in black. The BMWs in number 6, those are all in black. So they definitely have a thing for black. Not quite sure why. There's maybe always a heist.
I was going to say it's possible that it's like a visual cue to help you follow them in traffic.
Sure. I can kind of see that, but I would also argue like it doesn't, it makes sense for them what they're doing because it's like, oh, what color car is that? Well, it's black. Oh, so that it just blends in. But it's also like, maybe don't. I don't know. This series is weird. They have heists constantly with some goofy vehicle that's kind of made up or created specifically for it. Number 5 has a great vehicle which basically like rips cars out of the side of a train and is like a all-terrain vehicle thing that is bananas. It is bananas, and they keep having more and more of these goofy cars. One of the final things I'll kind of – mention here. One of my favorite things that that's bugging the hell out of me right now is all these people are driving cars. They're driving manual vehicles. And for some reason, only one or two of them have figured out that you can have a hands-free walkie-talkie. Everybody else uses handheld walkie-talkies, and they literally pick it up, put it to their mouth, and talk while they're in the middle of a car chase. Except, and it drives me bananas.
Except in this movie, where they do appear to have, like, nothing. I guess they're just using Bluetooth speakers, and they're on a group call. Because there is
at some point, but again, then they go back when they're in the Arctic area. They are literally using handheld mics again, and it's just driving me bonkers. It drives me bonkers.
Well, so what did you think of the fate of the Furious in particular?
Let me touch on one final thing. Let me touch on one more final thing, which was in the last film. Okay. There is literally a fight between Dom and what is
the
his
Rock?
Name? No, Owen.
Luke Evans.
Statham.
Oh, Statham.
And Statham has wrecked his car, and he picks off pieces of his Aston Martin. All right, yeah. So he has a piece of metal Aston Martin in his hand. And the Rock or Vin Diesel has like two giant. Like, they missed it because that could have been – it could have said Craftsman on the side of it, and it would have been perfect. But he has two giant wrenches, and literally they are fighting exotic car versus muscle car, like, in the flesh.
Yeah,
and
it's, like, he's I got – they're like Stevedore wrenches, like those wrenches that you see on old WPA artwork.
Yeah,
it's the guy
absurd.
In the metal shop using a wrench the size of him. Yeah.
So yeah, it's literal like exotic car versus American muscle, and it's just like, are you serious? Like, they really miss the Craftsman like logo shout out.
To that point, there's a lot of like masculine posturing, but
oh yeah, there's a constant amount of fist fighting too.
It's weird though, because like, for as much as there is, and this may just be my view of it, it never reaches like what I'd call, or what people out there have called, like the toxic brand of masculinity. Sure. Like,
it's gotten there a little bit, because like, if I have to see one more shot,
like a parade
shot of butts,
yeah. Okay, but that's just like the camera. I'm talking about the characters. Yeah. Like, you never you never hear Vin Diesel go like, you know, to prove you're a man, you gotta fuck abroad. And it's like, no, he's like, you know, you're a man, you gotta take care of your family. And it's just like, okay, well, I could get behind that. He's like, you know,
it's a big deal too that Letty is absolutely an equal to Dom.
Oh,
like,
sure.
Michelle Rodriguez's character. Like, even if she doesn't get quite as much to do at times, like, she's absolutely an equal in these movies.
As was Giselle, who is played by Gal Gadot.
Yes.
Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
I guess I should say, we're going to be spoiling the shit out of the previous seven movies. So you should be aware of that. I think that they need to get another female member, because Ramsey, as good as she is, her shtick is kind of like, I'm going to type on this computer and do a thing. And I'm also going to have Roman and Tej, played by Tyrese and Ludacris, respectively, like, weirdly fight over me, even though it seems as though she's already with Ludacris. But then again, maybe she's not. Like, I just don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with that.
We'll need to talk about computers as well this episode.
There's so much to talk about. I was going to say something, but then I realized that might be a spoiler. Let's
Wait, Bill needs to go.
Yeah, I know, that's what I was going to say. Bill, are you at last purged of your 4-day, 4-film like masochistic drive? Are you ready to talk about the fate of the Furious?
Yes, I am ready. I knew going in that this one already had kind of like a bad rap. It was weird how critically it was already kind of getting a little tinge. But I mean, even number seven, I had heard it was really good, but coming off of six wasn't that good, especially compared to five. Five is definitely peak for most, from what I can tell, five for most fans of the franchise so far is like peak Fast and the Furious. Like, it's the best version of it. it's when The Rock gets introduced and they have like a lot of elements going for him. It becomes very much a heist film. There's not as much street racing stuff, and it's just a lot different. This film, man, it buckles down on just the chaos and the craziness of the crew and like everything that's involved with them. As soon as, to be honest with you, I never had an issue with Hobbs. His like diplomatic security service or whatever the hell it is. I never had an issue with him. It's called the DSS. I never had an issue when they got involved, but boy, when what is his name? Kurt Russell's character got involved in the series, it really, really turned a different degree. It became so absurd and so over the top that I started to kind of lose track of like what they were doing at times. This film, it brings in so many characters for no apparent reason whatsoever, except to just have more bodies in the fray. It's almost started to lose a little of its luster in like that they are all about family. And by the end of this film, the family aspect of it is still highlighted, but it's also like, I feel like character motivations are awfully weird in this film. Specifically surrounding like Jason Statham's character. And I don't know how much spoilers we want to get into.
None at this point.
Yeah, I feel like that's all spoilers, honestly.
Okay.
Yeah.
But so a lot of that kind of interlude is really interesting. As far as Charlize Theron and her character and her like involvement with Dom, they're really, really like stretching, and like Dom's characterization throughout this entire movie is almost like painful to watch. It makes me wish for the sincerity of Number 5 and even like the first film. The first film is so sincere about everything it is. And that reminds me of the fifth film. It's just trying to be this big, fun action adventure, and it's not trying too hard. It has a lot of fun with like special effects and blending of practical effects and real cars and all this stuff. And like, it really kind of roots into, I think it's the best performance of all the cast members in Number 5. And this film really, really stretches Vin Diesel's range, but not even his range. Like, they just give him a mysterious outlet, and that's about it. As far as some of the special effects, because that's ultimately what a lot of people are coming here for, is to see the car chases and to see the cars and to see some of the stuff. It's pretty great, I gotta admit. But again, I think this is one of the longest films in the series as well, if I'm not mistaken.
History.
Yeah. But it also, man, by the time Scott Eastwood's character is introduced, I'm just like, oh, gosh, this film desperately needs a Paul Walker in it. It really does. It needs someone with some charm. It needs someone and it feels odd to say that I need to plug another white dude into this film that is mostly minority characters. But Paul Walker really kind of grounded the series, and it gave it kind of this fun interplay, because it gave someone that Vin Diesel could kind of play against, because they always had this kind of challenge, and they always had this kind of competitiveness with each other. And that kind of gets turned onto Hobbs here, but I just don't think they play off of each other well. And you can almost feel like the tension every time they're on screen. Well, they're not on. Unfortunately, Hobbs and Dom are not on screen very much at all in this film. So I guess, that's where I'll kind of end that. Charlize Theron, boy, oh boy, they gave her a Metallica tank top at one point, and she has dreadlocks that I can't quite understand what's going on with. Her character's probably the most evil of the bunch, but boy, her like entire existence is really strange in this film. It feels like they cast her first and then started like building out her role and didn't give enough time for that. So yeah.
All right, Michael Snydell, what did you think?
Okay, so let me put it this way. For the first about 20 minutes, I should say this. I took 5 pages of notes about this movie, which is insane. I wrote down 5 different times that this is gloriously stupid. But I can tell you that I really stopped enjoying this movie maybe 45 minutes in, and it's a combination of things. So one is that this is, even by the standards of Fast and the Furious, which have become, you know, incredibly convoluted, this is the most crowded Fast and the Furious film, and also the one that feels weirdly the most insubstantial to me. Partly because, despite being nearly 2.5 hours, it is so much plot and so much exposition, and there are so few of those signature moments that have, I don't even want to say peppered, because they've been the backbone of the series, of, you know, of not just like, of, you know, characters wisecracking, but not constantly like related to the action. Like, I really in previous films had a sense of, for instance, why, you know, Roman and Ludacris's characters would be friends, or why these characters would be around each other. And there is just a real sourness to this movie that really bothered me, that comes through in a lot of different ways. Bill is kind of, brought a long time. The Fast and the Furious series has become, you know, so far past the point of absurdity and has been only grounded by those relationships. And I think I differ with him on Furious 7. I think Furious 7 actually was really good about that sincerity that was in the core installments. But there is something here that just feels like it's constantly trying to remind you of those stakes. And so that especially comes into, comes in through Charlize Theron's character, which I won't get into further, but like her character is like a prime encapsulation of this installment's like really self-serious, annoying intention to try to make the stakes really serious and to try to make it, kind of grim and dark, but not grim and dark in the sense of like, you know, not in the sense of, DC, like this strained darkness, but just a sense of like glibness and a weird, like, gratuitousness to the violence in this. Like, it comes across in the sense of like, there's just so much emphasis on explosions and like so many bystanders dying in this movie. And like that sense of carnage has always been there, but you know, whether it's the difference between what Gray actually wants to focus his camera on, there's just a sense of a weight to the violence here that's really off-putting to me, in the same way that Lynn like brought like a sense of like gymnastics to the chases. Yeah. And Juan, who I didn't like as much, but even still, there was like an athleticism there that just isn't here. There's just a clunkiness and a burliness that feels like it's paying lip service to the core themes of the series.
The car chases here specifically have definitely taken a hit. Like there's an entire sequence on like the ice where they like at one point they line each other up to defend each other, and you're just like, what? Like, none of this film makes any sense as far as like car chases. And sure. At one point there's Dom is just driving around a base for no apparent reason whatsoever except to kill time. And I'm just like, I really have lost all sense of like there's, you're right. There used to be so much like just beauty in some of the car chase sequences and how they would get around things and how they would have fun with this. And yeah, it started to kind of dwindle a little bit in 7, but man, it is gone by this point.
Sure.
And again, having seen all of these kind of back to back to back since 4, 5 was a peak and 6 was still riding pretty damn high. And
there's some great set pieces in that one, even if story stuff's dumb as shit.
but you know, it reminds me that as far as these films are concerned, they're still kind of, they can build it back up. So this is definitely kind of, it sounds like you would agree, Michael, this is definitely a kind of a low point for the series.
I think this is one of the worst for me.
Yeah.
I think the other thing too is I think that a lot of my problems with the character chemistry, this requires a hump in understanding a character motivation that goes beyond like plot holes. Like there's a lot of things that don't make sense, you know, beyond like continuity errors or things like that. Like there's just huge parts of the Fast series where you're like, all right, I'm going to have to jump, but this requires jumps in character, like in understanding what these characters would do in a certain moment.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's preparing. I mean, this is already planned to 11. Like there are at least 3 more. So I can tell that they're already, you know, they're already preparing to fill in these blanks. And that happens with especially certain characters like Deckard. Like you could just tell there's a lot more story there, but that doesn't make it okay right now. And that still makes me wonder, like, what happened to all these characters that I wanted to hang out with? And you know, like it was Paul Walker who like brought like a, you know, it'd be hard to call Paul Walker a great actor in any context, but there is a gravity that he brings to these scenes, and that he especially in scenes with Vin Diesel, that he could bring to those moments. And that was that they were best friends in real life as much as, you know, what has been written for them, but that isn't here. And Vin Diesel absolutely has to carry all of that pathos and that weight on his shoulders. And you are just dying for someone who isn't like a quip machine. Like I really wanted Han in here is specifically what I was thinking about, Bill. Did you see Tokyo Drift then, Brian?
Nope.
Or no, Han is in 6.
Han's in like 5 and 6. Yeah.
All right.
Han's in 5 and 6.
And it's just like, okay. And I guess the last thing I want to say is that like, you start describing the set pieces in this, and there's a lot of really cool stuff in this movie. Like there's a lot of really cool ideas. There is someone we haven't mentioned at all, whose entire character is just like, I want a whole movie about that. Like there are individual set pieces here, even when they're quoting things. Like, it's impossible to not talk about Fury Road with the final sequence. But, like, as far as an elaborately staged, you know, character action set piece, there are some really good stuff in there, but it's the foundations here that are so faulty. And what the fuck were they doing with Cypher? She does not ever get behind a car, which everyone has talked about,
which is crazy. She's Furiosa, for God's sakes.
but it's, this is just a bizarre, it's just a bizarre thing of, it's not even like I want them to cut things, because obviously this movie doesn't need to be longer, and I appreciate the sheer audacity isn't even a bold enough word for how crazy this movie is. The sheer brazenness that they approach this series, but they lost something on the way.
I don't know. We've been talking so long. I don't even know what is left to say, in all honesty. I agree with most of what y'all said. I think this is a lesser film than 5 and 6. I think it might be like tied with 7 for me. But all that said, like, I still had fun. I was still sitting there like laughing and shaking my head in disbelief and just saying out loud like, "What the hell?" And I feel like I'm allowed to be verbal at these films. Mm-hmm. And like 7 as not perfect as 7 was, I still had a blast with it. And this one, sure. I just felt a little less of that blast. Is a shame, because I earnestly look forward to these movies.
These are my favorite superhero movies. We were talking about this in Slack, Brian, but
These are kind of my Marvel films. Marvel films, if they disappeared tomorrow and I lost all my memories, whatever. But I would miss the Fast and the Furious, the ones that I've seen anyway. And that's a shame. And this one is, it still has a lot of stuff. And one of my other favorite things about these movies, and we'll get into it in spoilers, is just talking through some of like the real world mechanics that this requires. And like, I just want an entire podcast where we do nothing but talk about like what this must mean. Like when something happens, like, okay, let's think about like the real world logistics of then what has to happen. Because there is an emotional turn in this movie, and all I could think of was, it'll be like literally the first thing we talk about when we get into spoilers.
Sure.
Just because like, and it might just be who I am personally and where I am in my life, but I was just like, well, that was a dumb choice because X. So that's a plug and a teaser for spoilers. But in general, like, you know, this is still a great movie. I would probably rather watch this than Captain America Civil War or... Or like the third or fourth or second Iron Man. Or the first.
Did you find this one heavier, at least in the... I feel like Bill and I are kind of on the same page, at least in that.
It's definitely... It's weird because, like you said, it's kind of lost its like more pure soul... because Paul Walker passed. So you don't have him as like the former good guy who's now a family man and in love. And like, you know,
also they're just like straight up killing people now.
Well, yeah, that's, I mean, yeah, there's, they've decided at a certain point, like, well, we're like action heroes. And like some of the, another thing that I can't wait to talk about, like the changing face of the international movie market has made plots more complicated just because we're so eager not to offend anyone.
Jesus. Yeah.
Which is, I love. And that'll be probably the second thing that I want to talk about in spoilers. But in general, like, yeah, I had fun with this movie. I sat there, I like clapped and laughed and stomped my feet at certain times, but to a lesser extent than 7, definitely to a lesser extent than 6, and to a lesser extent than 5. But I think, no one asked me, but personally, I think I like 6 more than 5.
That's fine. I've heard that.
Yeah. I don't know why. There's something about it. I think, like, embracing a little bit of the superheroics that have happened. I think the trying to get Letty back is a better version of what they do here, where they're trying to get Vin Diesel back.
Mm-hmm. Because
with Vin Diesel, he's obviously being manipulated, and I think that the way this is such a soap opera thing to say, but his reasons for going bad are less interesting than amnesia, which
compelling.
Yeah. which is just like when you've got like someone's got amnesia and it's like, uh-oh, like how are we going to win them over because they don't even remember what's going on. And instead we've got Vin Diesel, who's got a mysterious motivation for like the first hour, maybe. I don't know. But
I don't even know why they hold it back. I really don't.
I think because if you were to do it up front, it would be like a little too much too fast and furious.
Look at this. look at this iPhone. Come with me.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, you're wondering, you're like, well, it can't be that complicated of blackmail because he's... And then the best part about that is she leaves him her iPhone.
That's so right.
He's just got like a second iPhone now. He's like, I guess I got this thing happening. Because back in the day, you would just hand them a picture.
But, Bill lost us.
God damn it. Bill?
Yep. Okay, I'm back.
So,
that was weird.
So back in the day, if you want to blackmail someone, you just hand them a picture. And but now you can't do that, because I guess no one prints out pictures anymore. So it's here, have my iPhone. I would love a scene in a movie, honestly, where like someone's like, well, check this out, and they hand the iPhone. But then because they turned it the wrong way, like the picture moves, or like they haven't
and then
the
they keep doing
while,
it, they
so
keep
it,
rotating it.
It goes to the lock screen, they're like, oh, it turned off. And it's like, God damn it. Well, just here, just turn it back on. It's like, well, it's not accepting your thumbprint. And then it turns on, but like it's switched to another app. And like, they're like, God damn it. What the hell? And then what if like they're looking at the picture and then they do that thing that always scares the shit out of anyone who has an iPhone or any cell phone, where you hold up your phone and someone takes it from you and looks at the picture you told them to look at and then starts swiping?
Yes. Don't swipe right. No.
Yeah. My girlfriend has a hilarious story where she went before, or my girlfriend, my wife, when she was my girlfriend still living in Texas, she showed someone a picture on her phone and that person began swiping and she swiped the phone from them and screamed, I am in a long distance relationship. Do not look at my pictures. Because, yeah, I mean, like, Jesus, that's a terrible idea. I don't know why people do that, if I can go on a tear for a second. Don't. That's like you walking into someone's house and rifling through their closet when they just wanted to show you their new curtains. Like, yeah. Don't be a dick. You don't have free
reign. If someone called
here.
Me over just to show me new curtains, though, I'd be pretty mad, I have to be honest.
Okay, well, imagine that you're in the house. Never mind, we're not getting into this. So, I will say, like, this movie is, like, C+, B-, which, again, in my movie score system, is still something that you should see. Especially if you like these movies. Like, I don't think there's anything in here that's going to turn you against them. But I don't think it does a good job of, like, replacing Paul Walker, quote-unquote. And I don't think
there's,
it
like,
really
less
fleshes
human
out...
moments.
What was that?
In this, there's, like, less human moments,
yeah,
or, like, spontaneity in this than, like, almost any other installment I can think
of. I will say... Roman Harper, so he's played by Tyrese. He's been almost insufferable throughout this entire series. He hit like all his jokes.
Point?
He's I understand his point, and I understand.
No, I
but,
said what is his point?
Oh, I
just like you
just
know.
To be annoying.
Dom's a driver.
But
like Hobbs is the cop. Roman doesn't do anything, but Tej is like a computer hacker.
Well, I thought Roman, they set him up as being the guy that can get them cars, but also I think I'm trying to remember because they bring him in at number 5 and they have a specific role, and I think it was
he's like the suave ladies' man honeypot kind of
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, no, but oh, he's the talker.
But the worst.
He can talk himself into any
but he's
situation.
Terrible at talking.
Exactly. Like he's not good at that job.
It's like if you brought me in and were like, here's our mathematician.
I will say it's usually a 90% to 10% success ratio for him. Like 90% of his jokes never land. And this one was more of a 50-50. So this like he's at his best in this film. And it feels so sad because it's like, wait, he's at the best in this film. And this is one of the worst films in the series. It's like, cool. Bravo. Yeah.
And one of the weirder things is
100% for me.
One of the weirder things is that like none of these people, like I don't know what Roman or Tej or Ramsey do when they go home. Like the you know, Dom has Letty, obviously Brian had Mia and their child, and even Hobbs, like, I didn't really need to know in the first film, but they fleshed out his background. But, like, I'm still wondering, like, when they're not heisting or fighting international cyber terrorists, like, does Tej just sit in a dark room waiting for his phone to ring? Like,
no, they touch on that. I thought it was in the last film. He works at an auto body shop. Like, that's what he wants. He wants to help underprivileged children or adults, like, help fix their cars and not get ripped off. And then Roman, as you might guess, as you might like figure out, he is just an international playboy. Like, he flies on his jet that says it's Roman bitches, and then he has like a bunch of like four different women with him that all look like they're obviously like gold diggers, and it's just like, cool. So that's what you did with your money. Awesome.
Yeah. I do remember that now. Yeah. And then my final thought is that there is no movie in history has ever loved ass as much as these Fast and Furious movies love an ass.
Yes, that
it's,
is
it's,
true.
It's yeah. almost bizarre because, like, you know, the male gaze and everything, like, you know, most films will give, I would say, equal time to the chest area. Mm-hmm. But these films are, like, super viciously uninterested with, like, the female form above the waist. It's,
it's viciously weird, uninterested.
it's a weird stylistic tick where, like, I remember there was that scene in Fast Five where Gal Gadot, like, goes to seduce a guy, and the camera just sticks to her ass, and I'm like, are we just neglecting the rest of her? And yeah we did, because the ass then became a plot point. I want to bounce through a couple of non-spoiler things first that I just found hilarious. So one is the opening race that takes place in Cuba, and first
that's
of all,
it's probably my favorite first, scene of the movie.
That you got to get some information in there. It's the first film, I guess, that since the embargo has lifted on Cuba.
This film, like, they must have heard, like, Obama say, like, hey, we're opening up Cuba, and they were just like, we're there.
Yep,
we're gonna race in Cuba.
And, check this out. Vin Diesel can speak a little Spanish. Here we go.
Necesita.
It was better than Ludacris speaking Spanish in what is that? Five or six?
I think it's five. Okay, so what I was gonna say is, you can, like, feel a little bit of Vin Diesel's, like, his muscle in terms of, like, production in this, because it opens with him basically being like a god Robin Hood to, like, the people of Cuba, and
he
like, everything he says, like, there is a crowd of really, like, excited young people behind him, like, all dressed in, like, the Gap summer collection, ready to, like, cheer. And then when he wins, like, somehow the entire party has moved in the time it takes him to race a mile around Havana, and they're all waiting for him, and then he has to, like, flip the car because it's on fire and the brakes aren't working. And when he stands up after having rolled out of the car that before it jumps into the ocean, a, like, whole elementary school's worth of children surround him, and he has to leave
and hug him
to, like, go to teach this, like, thug, this, like, loan shark a lesson. And, like, they literally have, like, one of those, hey, man, you're all right moments. And then the entire crowd cheers when Vin Diesel lets him keep his car. And I just was like, what the fuck are we doing? Like, this is like 17 Save the Cat moments all at once.
And they somehow call back to that an hour later.
Yeah, it's wonderful. They call back to it twice.
Yes.
Which we can get into in spoilers. Are there any other things that we want to talk about before we... Should people see this? Do you guys...
I think, having caught up with the series as much as I have now, I think, look, you're probably not going to be able to avoid this if you want to continue watching the series. So, like, the other movie made $1 billion. So more than likely, and this movie has already brought or broken the opening weekend box office that was previously held by The Force Awakens, which just blows my damn mind.
That was China. This had all dates on the same day. China or Star Wars. Oh, Jesus. Star Wars opened in China 3 weeks after the U.S. date.
Okay.
So that figure's probably not totally right, but it is still crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Still blowing my mind.
Yeah.
Still blowing my mind. It's crazy. But yeah, when the last film made $1 billion, that's when it kind of broke my brain, because I was like, I didn't realize that many people were still watching this show or this series. And so, you know, now I'm glad that I've caught up with it, but yeah, I think there's going to be no way, unless you're just Brian and you just ride or die, baby. You just ride or die, and you're just like, I'm gonna watch number five. I don't care. Whatever. This is great, right?
Number five wasn't too hard to pick up on, I'll just say.
No, no.
I feel like this one would be.
You're still missing out. Yeah, you're missing out.
You know what? I'll go back and like watch one and three. How does that sound?
That sounds good. Yeah.
Okay. Two has one good moment.
Yeah, a number.
Well, send me the YouTube clip. But no, I'll say, like, this movie, like, there are, and this is coming from me, who's only seen the last four of them. This has a lot of callbacks.
Yes.
You will, like me, have to at least seen from five onwards to understand. Mm-hmm. So let's go to spoilers. Let's talk through a little bit of the plot of this.
That is one thing to be said. This series actually remembers its history in a way that a lot of series don't. Like, it doesn't really write people out, which is kind of impressive.
Except in this particular one, because they sure overwrite a lot of shit, and they're just like, "Nah, we're not gonna deal with that." And it's just like, wait. Especially with fucking, I mean, we're in spoilers now, so
are we in spoilers now? Because Mike started saying
we are officially in spoilers right now.
Okay, so
we gotta run this down, guys.
So yeah, I'm gonna dash off a couple spoilers real quick. So first of all, the reason that Dom has betrayed his family, is that it turns out that Elena, who he hooks up with in five and then leaves at the end of six.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The cop from Buenos Aires, she apparently was pregnant, found out right before he got back together with Letty. And so she just went off to have the baby. We saw her leave at the beginning of seven, and I guess she says that she found out, and then she was not going to say anything until after his honeymoon, which that is quite a come down from a honeymoon. And yeah. So Cypher, Charlize Theron, discovers this, kidnaps Elena and the baby who this mother has decided not to give a first name because she believes the father should give the first name. Which is like a real back twist, just to give like an emotional catharsis at the end of this movie. And so Charlize Theron's like, you do what I say, or I'm going to murder this woman and this baby. And that's going to suck for you. And Vin Diesel does not like enlist the help of his friends or anything. He just immediately falls in line. And we don't find out about this until like the second heist that he does, I feel like.
I'm going to say like an hour plus.
It's a little over an hour into film. And you're just like, really? That's the plot twist?
Yeah, so he steals an EMP for her, like a weaponized EMP, sort of like in the Oceans movie. And then he helps with the aid of like literally a thousand drone cars that have been hacked.
No, he gets the God's Eye first.
Oh,
so,
right.
So
they
in
have
between
to,
that.
They have to bust into Mr. Nobody's headquarters and steal God's Eye. which is the thing that Jimon Hansu wanted in the seventh movie.
Yep.
And so they get that. And then I think after that is when we find out about Elaine and the baby. Then they go to Manhattan. And that's when the 1,000 cars that have auto-driving capabilities...
Which they don't.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're using what appears to be, like, parking and lane assist as, like, a full-on drone fleet, which, whatever, I'll allow it, because that's a pretty good scene. I enjoyed that whole debacle. So then he steals the nuclear football from a Russian diplomat, which I'm not 100% on why the Russian diplomat has the nuclear football in New York and not, like, the president of Russia. I feel like Vlad would, like, want to keep that on him.
Just at all times.
Whatever. I feel like Vlad, like, probably has, like, the codes in there. Just, like,
he sleeps with it.
Of his favorite dog. I'm also, from now on, I'm going to be calling Vladimir Putin Vlad. So I hope everyone has been able to pick up on that. And so then he goes back. But the problem is that he wasn't willing to shoot Letty to get the football from her. And so Charlize Theron's like, you know, you let me down, and we still got like 14 steps left in this plan, so I gotta teach you a lesson. And so she goes into like the Hannibal Lecter-esque glass cage that she's keeping this woman and child in, and she's holding the baby. Very creepy. She really, she tapped her witch from Snow White and the Huntsman.
Mm-hmm. That's her best scene for sure.
Oh my god, yeah, she's like, they are so cute. I certainly hope I don't hurt him. And Dom's all like, what are you doing? Where's my baby? And
Sylvester Stallone?
my Vin Diesel turns into a Stallone real easily.
Yeah. Keep workshopping it, Brian. We'll let you know.
Corona family. So this is my Corona family. So anyway. And then her guy, Tormund Giantsbane from Game of Thrones.
And force majeure.
Yeah. He shoots Elena twice in the head. Like, murders her in front of Vin Diesel. And this was where, I guess because I'm a dad, of a child who is roughly the same age as that baby appeared to be, I was like, who's going to take care of that baby now? Like, because I don't know if you know this, but it is a lot of work to take care of a baby, especially when they're that age, because like my daughter like crawls now, and like she'll do it whenever she feels like it, which involves like when she's getting changed, and it's just like, that's a pain in the ass. And she's also, this is apparently a stage of development, you know how like you'll see a kid in like a restaurant and their parents will pass them something and they'll just turn and drop it and then look down at it, like that's a phase, like that's the developmental process where they're learning like object permanence and understanding of cause and effect. So I just like imagined one of her like heavily armed security guys who's like, I guess, first hired, and he's or like last hired. And it's just like, you know, Stefan, can you put down your Glock and go take care of that baby? Because like, but it's weird because like when Jason Statham, spoiler alert, Jason Statham and his brother, so Deckard and Owen Shaw being the bad guy from the sixth movie, use like personal jet suits to land on her plane, and they steal the baby from her.
Best sequence in the entire.
Yeah, that is a truly great.
Did you already mention Helen fucking Mirren then?
No, I'm just jumping ahead because when Statham goes and finds that baby is alone in that glass room, and not only that, but there is a carrier in there. So like, at some point, I guess they've just
shoot him up.
I guess they've been like moving this baby around, and they're like, well, you know, if we're going to put him in a car, we should have a carrier that we can strap into the car. Like, it's so weird, but not as cool as what I was hoping, which was just that he'd have a bulletproof baby Bjorn and just carry the baby on his chest. But, yes, so it comes out that Vin Diesel gets in touch with Helen Mirren, who is the super Cockney. I'm talking full Fink Cockney.
And leopard printed.
She is like, what do you think always gotta do? And so he's like, hey, I know where your kids are, And now that I'm a father, I understand, like, parenthood. I'm going to help you get them out. Because, spoiler alert,
she also
alert,
says
like,
devil's bumhole. That's yeah. also a thing that's said in this movie.
Like, Jason Statham, who murdered Han, is now treated like a protagonist because of, like, one line of dialogue where he yeah. says that, like, his whole terrorist background was yeah. fabricated by the government, just like The Rock's is, because The Rock is now, like, a most wanted terrorist.
Yeah,
and he's like
also a military hero.
Yeah.
So the fact that he murdered Han in cold blood, sweep it under the rug. And it's just like, wait, I thought this movie's all about family. Like, isn't Dom like literally like killing some of his own family to save his own flesh and blood?
Yeah, it seems like it. Like, I guess he has stages of family. Like, biological family trumps the shit out of, you know, family, like friend family.
Yeah.
Or maybe he, you know, because he see at some point in this movie, you find out that, like, he's been playing her since before New York.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess he had a plan and he figured he'd work it out. But I don't know why he couldn't just tell someone at some point, like, real quick, like, she has my baby, I got to do something, you got to help me.
Yeah.
You know, like, send a text message, for God's sakes. Like, throw. I kept expecting, like, he would get in a fight with someone and they'd be like, you know, he was holding back. I could tell, because if he really wanted me dead, I'd be dead. And then they'd, like, look in their pocket and find, like, something written on a candy wrapper that was like, hey, BT Dubs, got a son, LOL, sorry. but anyway, so he gets in touch with Helen Mirren, and she helps him with all this other stuff, because he's got to go with an EMP, the EMP, I should say, strapped to the back of his car, break into a Russian sub base. And this is important. It's not Russians. It is separatist terrorists.
Yes,
who have
that have hijacked it.
Taken over the base with a nuclear sub. No, yeah, a nuclear sub. I think the Akula was a nuclear. I just saw Crimson Tide. I should know more about subs than I do. They have an Akula-class sub that has a nuclear missile on it, even though I think it's being retrofitted? I don't know. But anyway, the most important part of this story is that the Russian government is apparently totes cool and in no hurry to retake a sub base that has been taken over by separatist terrorists. They don't say if they're like Chechen or, I don't know, from the Urals, and they're doing something. They're just blanket separatist terrorists who have taken over a sub base in the middle of nowhere. There is no other Russian military presence, so apparently, like I said, the Russians are just fine to hang out. And he's got to go EMP the submarine so that it'll reset, like do a hard reset, and she can hack in through a back door and again control it like a drone and use the nuclear warhead to kill things. She's like a Gossifer or Snowden type person, but she wants to be able to have nuclear warheads.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they win. And he being Vin Diesel, is able to use the NOS on his car to create a heat signature that a heat-seeking missile that pops up out of this nuclear ICBM-equipped submarine fires, and he leads it around on a little chase and then uses it to blow up the submarine. Now, I got a lot of problems from a military hardware perspective, because torpedoes don't explode on impact. You have to, like, put in a firing solution and basically say after 500 meters explode, because that's just how submarine warfare works. But in this, they're just like an explosive bullet that's waiting to hit someone after the rock kicks it hard enough. The heat-seeking missile attaches to a specific heat signature. It doesn't just find the hottest thing. I mean, there's
so
a lot
it picked
of
one of them. So
yeah.
It picked one of them. And so, yeah.
Because I guess he was the hottest. I don't know.
I guess, you know, you can walk it away from that way.
And also, this is the second time, by my count, that Charlize Theron has been in a movie where the major tension at the end could have been subverted if a person trying to outrun a giant metal vessel had just turned right. Because all these cars are getting hunted down by this sub, And like they're like, oh no, we're not going fast enough. It's like, just fucking move. Like, it's
yeah,
a sub.
Yeah, go left, go right. You are not in an omnidirectional
scatter.
Person. Like
you can assholes. Oh my god.
Omnidirectional person.
and so it all ends as it must, on top of a pre-war like apartment building on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, because I guess they've relocated from the LA scene. And
I'm gonna
barbecue.
I gotta mention this before you get to your final point. Hobbs is dressed in a motherfucking leather vest with a wallet chain, and it is blowing my damn mind. I can't understand whether that is an actual Rock decision, whether that was Vin Diesel being pissed off at the Rock during this, like the filming, or if somehow they
just
were just
changed
all
his wardrobe
okay
to fuck with him.
I don't understand why he is dressed like this, because like Hobbs is constantly in Under Armour all the time, and finally he's in casual wear and he's wearing a leather vest, and it is blowing my mind. It is the stupidest looking outfit I've ever seen, and I've seen Vin Diesel dressed in all of these movies, and it still tops all of those outfits. I'm just like, wow. I saw Vin Diesel get married in an entire white suit with white shoes.
That's true.
And this tops it. I'm just like, why, Rock? Who told you to wear that? Who convinced you?
But here's,
was it his decision?
So here's the. Oh, also, I guess we should say that his Vin Diesel's whole heist, or not heist, his like con, his mammoth-esque con that he's been pulling off, is done.
Do not call it mammoth. Come on.
Has been done with the help of like everyone who's ever been in a Fast and Furious movie, including yep. This is the callback, including the guy who he beat in Havana, who,
yeah,
for some reason, is the only person on Earth who will come to New York and park a truck. I don't know. So, and then they're having the barbecue. Mr. Nobody shows up with Little Nobody. P.S. Scott Eastwood is in this movie. And he's like, hey, just came to tell Hobbs that he's not on the FBI's most wanted list anymore. I assume neither is anyone else. And they're like, hey, good work, you got everything. And then they're like, gonna leave. But then Jason Statham shows up, and Mr. Nobody's like, ooh, we're gonna want to stick around. This could be good. Because the protagonist is about to get his son back from the international terrorist assassin who saved him from an airplane in the best scene in the movie, while the kid is listening to Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Yes.
Which, perfect, why not? And then they all have a barbecue.
Oh, hold on.
And they pray.
And then they name him
Brian. Yeah.
So expected. Tom Gilchrist, one of my buddies, he mentioned why he, like, just go full on meta. We understand why you're naming him Brian. Why don't you just call him Paul?
That's what I was expecting. Because in the movie,
like,
Brian is just retired.
Exactly. He's just a phone call away.
You know, he's like, I'm going to call him Brian. And everyone's like, that's great. That's a great way to honor our friend who retired.
Like, yeah, no, it is the flimsiest thing in the world, by the way, when earlier they're like, should we get Brian? He's like, no, we can't get Brian. And that's just the end of it. It's like one sentence. And like,
yeah. Yep.
You know, I know that they obviously didn't want to, you know, depart him from the franchise in a way that would allude to the real life circumstances, but it's just like the whole vacation thing,
like,
is it's kind of becoming a bit of an issue.
That's the thing. They're like, Brian's retired. We can't talk to him. It's like his best fucking friend tried to murder you. Like, maybe you could give him a phone call.
And Brian's been the one that they've been going to for a while now. Like, all these impossible circumstances keep arising, and they're like, oh, Brian, let's pull Brian into this.
Yeah,
and
gonna,
it's just like, okay.
They're going to have to come up with a better reason for him to not be able to help.
Yeah.
Like, I know that that's hard, and I'm glad that they didn't kill him at the end of 7, Sure. They gave him a beautiful send-off like that. But, like, you know, maybe say, like, his son has cancer and he's not in a position to help or something. Like, God, like, just anything, but... remember how we promised we wouldn't talk to him?
Sure.
Like, I have broken silences with friends over very simple things. Like, you know, we're never talking again. It's like, hey, man, I know that we said we were never talking again, but, like, he's back on heroin. You need to call him. Like, that... Like, and that's fine. Like, but this is Brian, who you're in great terms with. You, like, just because he retired doesn't mean you can never speak to him again.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, why didn't you just name him Paul? Or why didn't you name him, I don't know, Han or something? Like,
yeah, Han. Or Giselle. How about Han?
Sure.
Like, how about the guy that Jason Statham just murdered?
Yeah, and then they just all glare at Jason Statham.
Right, and I kept expecting someone to say, because, like, you know, him and The Rock have, like, a moment, but, like, I still kept expecting, like, there to be a moment where, like, you know, it would have actually made more sense if Vin Diesel, when he does shoot Jason Statham at some point.
Yes, sure.
And it would have made a lot of sense if he had said, like, this is for Han, and then shot him, and then, yeah, like, that wouldn't really make you think that he had killed him, and maybe was, like, getting into his bad guy persona. And, like, giving into the darkness. And then at the end, on top of the roof, you know, Jason Statham could say something like, you know, if you still want a shot at me for killing your friend, like, I'm down with that. And then Vin Diesel could be like, no, because you saved my son. And then you take a comedic beat, and then you say, plus, I already shot you. You know, I'm fine.
Yeah. So
again, why am I not a writer?
Wait, I'm sorry, guys. I just want to... I want to pause. Does anybody, I might be misremembering here, but after the introductory, like, why are we getting Jason Statham involved? Does anyone actually have a confrontation with him besides The Rock? Like, in the prison scene, and then when they're talking, and he has that great line about teeth.
I think they're like...
The Rock. The Rock I has think some really great burns in this movie.
He does.
Yeah, he does. I think there's a couple of moments when they're at Mr. Nobody's that everybody's like, whoa, we can't work with him. But it's mainly coming from Hobbs. It's mainly just like they are bickering and, back and forth.
And the thing is, the pieces are there for like a redemption arc for him. Because he like goes out of his way to try to keep Ramsey safe. Like, you know, he knocks her out of the way of a blast and then gets crushed by like a steel door. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay, so are they gonna now have a thing where it's like, you know, this guy killed Han, it's like, buddy saved Ramsey, it's like, you know, we're a family, we've all, oh no, because Vin Diesel wasn't there, so I can't do his voice.
Yep.
Well, shit. And I don't feel comfortable doing anyone else's voice, so they would just have to say something like, you know, he stuck his neck out for one of us, like maybe we can trust him, like maybe things have changed now. I don't know. It's a deeply weird movie. It also does that thing that I sometimes hate where, like, it's like the Spectre problem where it's like, hey, here's this new villain who has apparently also been responsible for everything for the last three movies.
Yep. So there's a movie.
I am the architect
moment.
Of all of your pain.
There's a moment in the middle of this movie where Cypher has the God's Eye, which is like this like crazy use of like information technology and ATMs and cell phone video and like every camera ever in the existence of Earth is connected to this thing. And she loses Dom for like 5 minutes in the middle of the movie. And for 5 minutes, they keep cutting back to Charlize Theron going, I can't see him. Why can't I see him?
I don't
and
like
for
this.
Five minutes, she says that line over and over and over, and it was driving me insane. I was just like, the writing in this film is so bad. Well, it's so bad.
There's a lot of questions involved in that scene, because like, how did he invent a switch and install it in his car to make his car misfire?
Without her noticing.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
And I don't know, there's like a bunch of stuff like that. I mean, we could pick it apart, and it's super fun to do that constantly.
That kind of points to like an ongoing problem in the series too, as it becomes more technological, like especially, I mean, I guess starting in 5 was God's Eye, and I think 4 had something related to technology, but like the techno babble in here, like, it was annoying exposition before, but like, it's this movie where we're spending long periods of time watching people typing on computers in literally the most boring way possible. Like, this movie has no interesting ways to show how she's a computer genius at all.
I love how the hacking works in this, because basically what you get is you get Ramsey and Cypher saying, "I blocked her out. I got back in. I blocked her out.
Smart.
I got back in." And you're just like, "What?"
Oh, now you're starting to annoy me. Yeah, it's like they're two people trying to get into a door, and they just keep finding new ways to shove each other out of it.
There's no momentum. Like, there's no. Like, and there's a lot of those scenes in this movie in particular.
Also, there's nothing more boring than, like, a flat glass keyboard. You got to at least give me the sound of clacking, you know? Like, I need them clacks.
Just like a medium? Yeah, no.
Yeah, like a mechanical keyboard. You know, just like... Like, I want it to sound like a fucking typewriter.
Sure.
Yeah, because you got to have that. What I was going to say is, what must it be like to be a human being living in the world of the Fast and Furious movies?
It's got to be insane.
The news.
A thousand cars in New York City just avalanched on top of another car.
Right, like, the news must like, be terrifying, like, you start your week, it's Monday, and you see something on CNN, it's like, separatist Russian terrorists have taken over a sub base in the Bering Straits, and, you know, this place is where nuclear submarines were going, or I think, like, old Soviet submarines were going to get retrofitted to be nuclear. So the terrorists currently have at least one sub with nuclear ICBMs. And you're like, oh, shit, that's terrible. That's, like, that's potentially worse than Syria. And then the next day, you know, you hear about, like, 1,000 cars in New York City were hijacked via unknown means and made to drive. Many people were still inside them. Hundreds are dead. Gridlock is at a standstill, and Dodge is reporting a fall in the profits, and, like, the economy is ruined, and you're just like, oof, well, that can't get any worse. And then, like, 2 hours later, they're like, we have now confirmed reports that a Russian premier was in that whole thing, and a man with a bulletproof shield and a giant chainsaw got the nuclear football from him, and so the sub that we talked about yesterday is now in play, and we're all possibly going to die. And you're like, uh-oh, well... I guess we're all going to die then. And then they're like, come in alive.
The submarine has been hacked
and is moving.
Oh. Well, I was about to say, there would be like breaking footage. Check out this crazy interaction in the middle of Times Square where four cars try to pin down a fifth car that's led by a rebel leader. And it's just like, what? What is going on right now? Like, that entire sequence is the stupidest sequence in this entire movie. I don't
know. Whoa, there's a lot of stupid sequences in this movie.
They are literally holding him back. Literally holding him back.
Did we all miss the part where I made mention of the fact that two men use personal jetpacks to board a plane?
No, because that's directly tied into one of my favorite scenes in this entire film, and probably one of my favorite scenes in this entire franchise. So I'm okay with that.
How about when someone moves a missile by sheer force of will?
Well, I mean, you look, it's called The Rock, right? By the way, I was having this discussion with a friend. He is the sweatiest human in existence.
Oh, my God.
Apparently.
He sweats like crazy.
Like I just want to know what they do in between takes. Like, there's got to be a spritzer for him.
I believe
that's just like glisten the beard. And glisten the forehead and the back of the head.
I believe
constantly.
It's the sixth movie where they make a joke about that, where someone's like, "Uh-oh, I smell baby oil," and then The Rock walks
in. Yeah. But it's not just baby oil. It is like it is sweat. It is just a genuine amount of sweat.
Yeah.
That I don't understand.
It's because his clothes are too tight. I don't know.
They're stretchy. They're Under Armour. They're never too tight.
Guys, by the way, I've been thinking a lot about this. Can you guys tell me what Cypher's motivation is in the third act? So you get that truly terrible scene where she says that she stole nukes for accountability so that when someone else shoots nukes, she'll aim her own nukes that she has at them. But then she is also apparently trying to send nukes to some unnamed city at the end. Like, that's apparently why they try to take over the... Like, okay.
No, no.
I guess
what,
the point is,
what
is Cypher's motivation?
So she has... This is what I was able to cobble together from the movie. So she is a hacker. She hacks things. And I think that she says she's not trying to, like, start World War III. She just wants to have the sub... Like, a nun wants a ruler. So, like, if a country were to do something bad that she didn't like, she could then nuke them.
Accountability is what the word
she used. So she wants to be able to, like, go on Twitter and say, incoming news from me, parentheses, thread, parentheses. everyone out there should know that I have a nuclear sub, I have the missiles armed, and everything's, I'm going to be able to strike if you do anything I don't like. Here's my 95 theses. Don't do those things or I'll nuke you. And then maybe she would nuke someone first just to prove it?
Yeah.
I guess. But like, yeah, I mean, like, because, you know, people might say, like, well, she's obviously lying, so she's got to nuke someone.
But I mean, isn't she trying to nuke someone at the end? Like, she, like, when she... No, when she takes the sub, though, like, she is getting ready to aim it and arm it.
That's her... I think that's what I'm saying. Like, that's her, like, opening volley. Is, like, I'm gonna shoot one just so they know I have it.
Yeah.
But if she shoots one, it's still a nuke!
Yeah. I mean, but she obviously has no compunction about... Like, she wants that first nuke to be... planet-wide scale of her shooting Elena in the head.
Okay.
You know, and then the rest of the unnuked Earth is baby Brian.
Okay. But she also wants revenge against Dom. Why?
Because
when she shoots Elena, she's also saying it's for other reasons.
Right.
And that was incredibly convoluted to me.
Because she wanted Nightshade, which is what Owen... Shaw was trying to get in the sixth movie,
and she
wanted God's Eye, which is what they had in the seventh, and he foiled both of those plans.
Yes. Okay. And so now she's got, like, a long running issue with him.
She's like, well, you're the only person who's ever foiled me, so now I'm going to use you by threatening your baby. Your baby, who Tom, the intern, is currently taking care of because I murdered his mother.
But by the way, I guess they can obviously make her character better, but she lives. Like, what is that?
They got her for the next one.
I would happily have them dismiss her.
Well, yeah, but now they got her for the next one.
Yeah,
I honestly think she's one of the weakest villains in the entire series.
Now, I guess, just always waiting to be plugged in somewhere. No, I agree.
The chaos maker.
She is the chaos maker. No, next time she'll fucking frame Roman with like 14 of his love children.
I'm sure that will go well. He'll be like, bye.
So what do you guys want to see, since we're already getting
in space.
More installments? Besides
in
space. I mean, what do you think is the course correction here?
I
think they need course correction.
I think they got to go smaller. They got to spend more time building up the characters. You know, put them in a Manchester by the Sea situation. That's now two jokes that I've made related to the last round table. So if you haven't listened to it, maybe jump back and do that.
The Fast and Furious bottle episode.
Yeah, you got to start doing what Marvel does and giving each of these people their own independent movie. So you've got, like,
they're
Roman
talking
Candle,
about a Hobbs.
You know,
talking
the Taj
about a
Mahal.
Hobbs. Yeah, a Hobbs spinoff and stuff like that. So
apparently that was originally going to be the post-credit scene, but Vin Diesel had such a problem with not being in that post-credit scene that the studio rescinded that.
Post-credit scene?
There is no
the post-credit sequence was originally going to be Deckard and Dom talking with the implication that they would have a spinoff.
Wait, you mean Deckard and Hobbs?
Yes, I'm sorry. Deckard and Hobbs.
Yeah, apparently Vin Diesel
was
a real candy
ass. I would watch those two.
I would. Any final thoughts on this before we?
I mean, please, they need to call the lineup. Call the lineup. Eliminate somehow. Take away somehow. Just, like, just don't use some of these characters. Holy shit! They're way too many. Way too many.
If you had to kill off 4 of these characters to thin it down,
4.
All right, 3. Let's kill 3 of them.
Okay.
So who would they be?
There would be Luke Evans.
Roman.
Does he count? I mean, he was in like 30 seconds of this movie.
I understand, but he's now a character we have to deal with because he's released.
I guess. All right.
So Luke Evans, bye. Roman, bye. And who else?
We need another stronger female
Ramsey.
Character.
So you're gonna
kill Ramsey. All
right. Get Ramsey out of the way so we can get a stronger female character in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they ever had a really strong, you know, sense for that character. Yeah. I think
I'm going to say,
I don't think they know what to do with
her. She falls into the background very easily.
They make a joke of it at the end. They're like, what's my last name? And they're like, I don't know.
Yeah. It's like, so they're even aware.
So I want to kill. This is like bang, marry, kill, but all the options are kill. I'm going to kill Roman. Sorry, Roman. I want to keep Tej, though. I like Ludacris.
Yeah, I like Ludacris.
I like Tej, too.
I will, however, kill Scott Eastwood.
Okay.
His name's Mr. No... Well,
Little Nobody.
Little Nobody. Like, he's nothing.
Yeah. Like, that's just a real obvious name. And then, I'm not going to say I'm going to kill Owen Shaw, just because I don't feel like he's going to pop up a lot. But I might kill Ramsey, or I might kill Vin Diesel, in all honesty.
Mm.
Yeah, I think this series is going to have some problems with stakes in the future.
Yeah.
Like, this was kind of the last card, and this card was pretty weak.
You can't just keep giving them children, you know?
Sure.
Unless you want to give Jason Statham a child.
Oh, I'd watch that.
Yeah, especially if the kid's like 8 and curses a lot.
Yes.
All right.
Well, you know, I think it's, I'm not sure if it's apocryphal at this point, but I believe there was talk about actually killing off Paul Walker's character earlier in the series until he kind of became a runaway success. Even around 5 or 6, I believe.
Oh, I didn't realize that he was a runaway success. I mean, he was in the first 2 and then the 4th.
Yeah, I guess runaway sex is success runaway sex. Is disingenuous.
That but was Paul Walker's nickname in high school.
Hey,
put that on my trivia.
Too furious.
Oh boy, but my point is, like, that, for instance, would have been something that would have actually undergirded this series with more stakes. You know, even as that gets into a little bit of ghastly territory.
That's the thing. I mean, like, killing Roman. Fine, killing Little Nobody, fine, but like, you, none of those really have weight. Those really are just like, sure. Like when they killed Elena in this, I was like, well, of course they are. They've got to get that kid in Diesel's hands.
Yeah,
and what, they can't, like, do that if she's alive.
When they killed Han, because that was such a 1-2 punch, because they killed Giselle and then they killed Han, and you're like, wait, you just wiped out like a happy little thing and it's just gone now.
And it's not like that darkness has affected them at all.
No, it hasn't. And that was their missed opportunity in this film and the last film, was they could have really, really, like, upped that ante. And instead they were just like, we won't even mention Han, but we'll mention Brian.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's as you're saying, Bill, in a series that's usually really good about its past, it's oddly agnostic of what happened.
It reeks of that those 2 actors wanted out of the series.
Well,
and
no,
that was Vin Diesel's way of getting them out of the series. Was no, okay, I'll kill you and we will never talk about
Han
you again.
Han died in Tokyo Drift, and then I don't know, like, what creative decision it was to bring him in 5 or four, like nothing had ever happened.
How do you know he died in Tokyo Drift?
Because I know things, Bill.
Okay, I'm just checking, just wondering.
Am I wrong?
Because I don't remember.
No,
honestly,
he died in Tokyo Drift, and he's alive in the later movies, and everyone was like, "What?" And then the producers are like, "Oh, P.S. Tokyo Drift is technically the future."
So then he
and Giselle are there, and the producers have to know, like, at some point we're gonna have to kill Han, and we've given him this great little love story. It's like, well, what if she dies first? And then that's why he goes back to Tokyo, and then he dies, and that's, you know, they're like together in heaven.
I didn't know that.
Well,
okay.
Yes, that is definitely a thing.
Yeah.
So any final thoughts again before we call it a night?
Last thing is, I think Gray is he's a step down.
Yeah, he's a lesser director. I would say even less than Rob Cohen probably.
I almost think Cohen has a more distinctive style. I'm not really sure how I'd describe Gray. I just feel like he likes explosions more than any other director in this entire series.
He's a cinematic Ditto, the Pokemon. You know, a good approximation, but then you look in the eyes and you're like, ooh boy,
sure,
that ain't right.
Yeah. Yep.
But I actually thought his Italian Job was, you know, decent. I mean, it's not the most distinctive thing I've ever seen, but that, you know, it did have a good sense of, an okay balance between humor and action. There's still some weird stuff in there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all for today.
That's enough.
Yeah, we're talking about this movie for an hour and a half. So let's get out of here. Before we do that, let me remind everyone to go to MUBI.com. Check out their fine selection of foreign and independent films and all the ways that you can watch them. As I said, a plethora, not a cavalcade. Maybe a cornucopia, but definitely a plethora of ways to watch, including mobile devices, smart TVs, Roku apps, and the like, as well as being able to download them. And you can have a free 30-day trial of MUBI by going to MUBI.com/filmstage. And we love you. We love MUBI. We want you to love each other. So we're giving you this opportunity. So check it out. Again, that is MUBI.com/filmstage. Gentlemen, let's tell the people at home where it can be found between now and the next time we speak, when we will be talking about something. I don't remember what we agreed on, but I'm sure that there's something that we're going to talk about. Michael Snydell, where can we find you?
You can find me tweeting Justice for Han on Twitter at Snydell. And I'm on Letterboxd just at my name, Michael Snydell.
All right, Bill Graham.
And I write things too.
Bill Graham.
You can find me spritzing the rock in between takes at CableBFG on Twitter, and also writing about movies on freshfiction.tv and the film stage.
All right. And I will be soliciting photos of Dry Rock, a dry Dwayne the Rock Johnson, on my Twitter at Brian J. Rowan. I also write for filmstage.com. I have a personal site, dearfilm.net. And, yeah, that's about that. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us, and tune in next time.
My God.